Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Pete a day early because we have some guest stuff, and I kind of sort of double booked because this time of year is so insane. But Pete, thanks for hopping on a day early.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it, man.
Today's show is going to be semi-packed because we have some fun rumor stuff, as you tend to this time of year. And then because of one of the questions that we got in the iTunes reviews, it led us to a conversation about how the Lakers could potentially fill out the rest of their roster. And then if there's time in segment three, we're going to talk about Mo Wagner and how he might help the Lakers. Pete put together a really cool video for Silverscreen, so make sure you guys check that out. And if we have time, we'll get into some of the nuts and bolts of that as well. As always, find the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Silverscreen, and Roll. You can follow me on Twitter at AnthonyRNLA. You can follow Pete on Twitter at LakerFilmRoom, and you can follow the show on Twitter at LakersOutsiders. Let's get into, in my opinion, what was my favorite story of the day so far. I think it was late last week that the Lakers sent out a team memo. We can't tamper. They had a meeting that Magic Johnson led that told everybody, you cannot tamper. Do not mention anybody's name. In defense of the Lakers today, they didn't name anybody by name, but they did mention somebody who they're really interested in from Palmdale. Pete, how does that script get out and made public?
Never a dull moment. You want to hear my conspiracy theory on this?
All right, yeah, go for it.
I'm guessing that the Lakers gave the idea, basically they commissioned a few different people to make a video, right, to produce this video. Mm-hmm. They've got video people on their team, but not necessarily the Hollywood type, right? So They commission this video, they give it to a few different people, and then they pick the one that they like the best. My conspiracy theory is that one of the losers leaked the script to that, because that's the version that makes the most sense to me. So I don't delve into conspiracy theories too often, but that's my guess.
I feel like the Lakers should have released like a few different like versions of the script, right? And then the one that got out, that directly links them back to the source of the leak.
Yeah, you're fired, right?
Like just straight out of the Game of Thrones thing, you're out of here. But the script itself, like, you know, it was inspiring. It felt a little Netflixy, right? It felt like, you know, what the 30 for 30, what if I told you a boy born in Palmdale, you know, that kind of thing. But the script itself, like a lot of people were kind of making fun of the script. People don't realize that NBA players are high key cheesy, like they're high key corny. They need different ways to get themselves pumped up. So the stuff that people, most casual fans, might laugh at might actually get those NBA players going. Do you think that script would work on you, Pete?
Hell no, man. I thought it was hella cheesy. It was, man, this is Hollywood. We can't get a better script than that. What the hell was that? You can play to the man's emotions a lot more effectively than that. That was awful. That was some like Hallmark card crap.
Right. Where's Ron Howard?
Which plays into my conspiracy theory, yeah. Which is why they didn't get the job in the first place, right? Maybe yeah. They're the ones that wrote the script, and that's why they didn't get the
game. Some spurned writer out there. Damn you, Lakers. Go Thunder. They got a new fan out there in OKC. The other bit of news, though, Darius Soriano made the connection, and a whole bunch of people made this connection, that, wait, a Paul George script just happens to leak right before you get the actual press release from ESPN PR saying that they're going to have a three-part documentary on Paul George's decision, how he got here, how tough the decision is going to be, and then part three is going to be after he makes a decision and what might be next. The thing that made me raise an eyebrow the most was Dwayne Wade's involvement in all this. And if we're going to go with the conspiracy theories, to this point between Paul George and LeBron, we haven't quite been able to make that connection. They don't really run in the same circles. LeBron is significantly older. He's a significantly bigger star. It was kind of hard to figure out the connection between those two guys. And then in steps Dwayne Wade here, right? And that, to me, like, I have never felt more sure about Paul George and LeBron coming to LA than after that. Am I jumping the ship here? Am I going way too far and beyond with my tinfoil hat wearing self?
No, I mean, like I said a couple shows ago, for me it's a zoom out type of thing. And then just listen to all of it. Like, what is all of it saying? And just, yeah, little things like that, what Darius pointed out, what you're pointing out here, like by itself, are they particularly compelling? No. When you hear a dozen of them a day, is that compelling? Hell yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. You know, and yeah, man, to me, my thoughts is that, this is not any sourced information or anything like that. It's just my thoughts is that this has probably been done for a long time. And the idea that, like, I don't know, the whole idea of like LeBron sitting and taking meetings and being like, very interesting what you have to say there, Philadelphia 76ers. Like, okay, go ahead. The Rockets are waiting in the waiting room. Go ahead and send them in on your way out. As though that's how it would work with him in this instance especially. Like, I don't know. It just seems far-fetched to me. And it seems like, I don't know if you saw Manny Navarro, who is the beat writer for the Miami Herald, who's been there for a long time, was on TV the other day saying that the LeBron's going to LA, and LeBron's people, the people that work with him, are all buying houses out in LA, and that's like, it's one thing, like LeBron can buy multiple houses in whatever city he wants to, right? But it's quite another for his people to be relocating out there. That's a life-changing type of thing for them too. So that's why for me, like, the whole idea that LeBron could keep secret where he wanted to be going at this stage in his career, with all of the quotes that he has about wanting to build an empire and things like that, I don't know, it's just far-fetched to me, man. I think that this has been done for a long time.
I tend to agree. I'm reaching that point where I tend to agree, and I have one more point to make on this, and I'll do that here in a second. The last bit of news, I guess it was the first bit of news. I'm not going in time order here, but LeBron, according to Ramona Shelburne, doesn't want a bunch of fanfare, doesn't want the crazy sales pitches that he's gotten in years past. And, you know, she also said that she also reported that he's still deciding what he's going to do with his player option. And the combination of those two things, like, I think you think about your player option because you're trying to figure out the best way to get everybody to the Lakers, right? Like, that's how I took that aspect of it. And then when you combine that with him not wanting the fanfare, not wanting the crazy sales pitches, it sounds to me like he might make his decision relatively quickly. Well, you do that if you're trying to get if the team that you're going to, if there's a whole bunch of moving parts here, like, that's what would lead you to make this big decision. And the I guess the third part of this, again, conspiracy, this is my favorite time of year because my brain just gets to run rampant. But the third part of this conspiracy here is that if Paul George and LeBron come to the Lakers, Paul George is going to be star number two, right? He's going to play second fiddle to LeBron. And maybe that might have been something that kind of hung up Paul George's camp a little bit. And as with this being a potential or a hypothetical, is, well, I was the star in Indiana. I went to OKC and I was second fiddle to Westbrook. If I come to the Lakers, will I just be the second fiddle here again? And this three-part documentary, like, if LeBron is saying, look, if LeBron's taking a step back and making his decision relatively quickly without as much fanfare, doing some kind of uninterrupted thing, and he gives Paul George the platform to do his thing, like, that's the first step from those two guys as teammates. LeBron kind of taking a step back and saying, look, I will be the guy, but eventually my career is going to start sliding downward in a downward fashion, and you're going to still be on an upward trajectory along with the other teammates that we have here in LA. Why not that be the first step here? And everything, it's like you said last show, everything seems to be blowing in the Lakers' direction here. And it's hard not to get our hopes up. We're going to, but it's hard not to.
Oh, they're already up, baby. They've been up. they're getting sky high, baby. Sky high.
So. No,
you're right. I think you're right on the right track with that. I think also for LeBron, you know, I don't think that stuff matters to him as much as it used to.
Yeah.
I think I don't have the exact quote, so I'm paraphrasing here, but I've seen quotes from him saying that he wants to become the richest man in the world, and you don't do that by just playing basketball, mm-hmm. right? And so the validation, the, you know, does this team want me? Does that team want me? Like, I would guess that a guy like that is past that, especially if he's got his eyes on bigger things. And part of the appeal, like, I guess a question that's worth asking, and I'll throw this back to you, is why does – like, try and put yourself in LeBron's shoes, and why does a guy like that decide to come to the Lakers without really entertaining too much else?
He – there's no – if he wants to, if it was just to focus on winning championships, he'd go to Golden State, right? Mm-hmm. If it was just to focus on, look, I want my family to be in the most comfortable spot, period, he would just stay in Cleveland, right? They've built a pretty good life for themselves out there in Cleveland. If he wants to take his not just legacy, because legacy you can do just about anywhere. He's pretty much set in terms of legacy. But if you want to launch yourself into the stratosphere of most successful athletes ever on and off the court, there's a pretty centralized city where that has taken place, right? Shaq, Lakers. Magic, Lakers. Kobe is doing it right now, Lakers. That's where you do it if you're LeBron. And if that's his top priority, then the choice is pretty clear here.
And that's also to your point about kind of stepping back and not making this free agency all about him and letting Paul George have some shine. That would make sense, right? Like, that mm-hmm. plays into – that's not even on his radar. So all of that makes sense to me.
Yep. All right. The point that brought us to this here and the reason I wanted to talk about all this was Dwayne Wade. Like, Dwayne Wade's involvement in this was the kind of final nail in the coffin here for Paul George's chances at staying in OKC, LeBron's chances at staying in Cleveland or signing elsewhere. And Dwayne Wade acts as a perfect segue to the second aspect of this conversation here, or the second part of this podcast is, all right, if that's the hypothetical that we're looking at, if we're looking at LeBron, Paul George, maybe the Lakers can move Luol Deng's contract so as to bring back Julius Randle. Reed at Reed _NBA, who writes for Foreign Blue and Gold, put together a really cool Google Doc and Google spreadsheet to go through all of the various hypotheticals on what the Lakers are capable of doing. So we're using that, and we're going to use Hoops Hype to look up free agency information here. But one of the questions that we got from iTunes that was for Pete and I was about, all right, how do you fill out the rest of the roster? So we kind of really quickly went through Hoops Hype to find a couple names here. The first name that we'll just use because he offers us the perfect kind of segue into this topic is Dwayne Wade. Do you think Wade is does he fit with what the Lakers would want to do? Is he a possibility at the veterans minimum? Like, do you think he just comes to LA to play with LeBron?
I think it's possible. I don't think he's a good fit, and I don't think that from a basketball perspective it makes a ton of sense. Mm-hmm. But also, if he's the necessary evil to make LeBron happy, you know, I'd prefer it to be on a vet minimum type thing. But he's probably, you know, mid-level exception type of guy, or even depending on the scenario. There are two different versions. If the Lakers are to get LeBron and Paul George, there are a few different versions that can go down. But say it's via free agency. If they're able to trade Deng, they can keep Julius. If they have to stretch Deng, they're going to lose Julius. So they're going to have varying cap space within that. I'm assuming they are not going to opt into Zubats's $1.5 million. So because you have to – it takes up a cap hold. It doesn't free up the full $1.5. It frees up about $700,000. Anyhow, you're looking at, if you trade Deng and keep Julius, having about $4.2 million in cap space. And if you lose Julius and stretch Deng and also let Zubats go, you're talking at about $7.5 million of cap space. So fitting Wade into one of those, I mean, if you got to do it, you got to do it for political reasons. I don't think the basketball reasons are all that great.
Yeah, I think what you need to surround LeBron with, or you need to surround this core, and just for those of you who are kind of wondering what the roster might look like without the additions on the peripherals here, you have LeBron and George, obviously. You have Ingram and Lonzo. You have Kuzma. You have Hart. You have the guys that they just drafted, Wagner, Mikhailuk, and potentially Bonga, though I don't really necessarily see that. And then, you know, maybe you have Zubats, and then that kind of rounds out your roster. I hope I didn't miss anybody there. And the pieces that the Lakers really need are more shooting. You probably need a second ball handler, a backup point guard for Lonzo. You need some size that can preferably still be able to shoot. And Wade does none of those things, right? And so when we – I'm going to take another quick second here. When we come back, we'll get into some names, though, that do some – do fit some of those needs. And we'll get to that here in a second. So the first name on the list, and I think it's – I don't know if it's necessarily going to work in terms of how much he would cost, but Avery Bradley – mostly because Hoops, they list it by caliber of player. Avery Bradley is a name. Do you think the Lakers will be able to afford him at, say, the MLE?
They would love to, but they're not going to get him at that.
No, I don't think so either. So we'll focus on somebody who they might be able to get. It plays a similar position. Is coming off of a full year of absence, and that's Seth Curry. He is an unrestricted free agent. He didn't make very much money last year. I could see him signing a make good deal on a one or two year kind of basis. He makes a ton of sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that you want to fill out a roster around guys like that is the main guys outside of the top two of LeBron and Paul George. I think, and you hit on this with like Dwayne Wade, is that you need young legs. Mm-hmm. LeBron, regular season LeBron, is a really bad defensive player. He yes. takes a lot of time off. He's going to if he comes, he's going to piss off Laker fans that think that he should be a two-way superstar at his age. That is an 82-game exhibition season for him, and he's not going to be screwing around with playing a whole ton of defense. So in order to make up for that, one of the problems with this year's Cleveland roster is you didn't have other guys who could help pick up the slack. Young legs like Lonzo and Kuzma and Ingram, all those dudes, hopefully Randall, they can bring that energy on a night-to-night basis to try and make up for that. So a guy like Seth Curry does not necessarily do that on the defensive end, but on offense, man, he's a hell of a shooter, and he's the type of guy that he's one of those guys that's like point guard size, but not really a distributor, not really a downhill type of game, but he can shoot the crap out of a basketball. And so the Lakers have been slowly, like with this draft, trying to find those guys, and Curry would be a good choice in that respect.
Following that same kind of pattern, another guy who can shoot the crap out of a basketball, Wayne Ellington. Former Laker, could he potentially be a hashtag future former future Laker?
I actually think he's a good fit. I think he's a decent defender, and he's a very good shooter. I think that he would be of – and it's hard to tell what the market's going to be. Part of me thinks that he may even be a little too expensive. But then again, there's not a lot of cap space. So maybe there is a team – maybe they would be able to get him. To me, he may represent the – best player that they could get that fits what they want to do within the cap space that they have.
I really like Wayne Ellington. I think he's just a really solid player, can shoot the hell out of a basketball, is, I guess, fairly solid as a defender, right? I think he's
like he's average. A two-way guy. Yeah, he's a two-way guy.
And so in that respect, and just a character dude. Like his time out here in LA, I never heard any complaints about him. He seemed like a really cool dude. That would be a great signing there. Last player in terms of guards that the Lakers could look at here, who I'm a little torn on this guy, because one of the issues with Kawhi seems to be the way that his, like, in my opinion, I think
I didn't even think about this. You're absolutely right. Yes.
Some of the issues that Kawhi has had in San Antonio has been teammates throwing him under the bus. Tony Parker is available, I guess, this season. He makes sense in terms of what the Lakers need basketball-wise, but I don't know if he necessarily makes sense in terms of what the Lakers are looking to do beyond this season.
You know, frankly, I'm not even sure he makes sense basketball-wise. I brought him up in our pre-show talk because he's a name that I've heard linked to the Lakers. One of the things that's dangerous, and this happened with LeBron in Cleveland as well, but this has happened across several teams with superstars, is those guys have a lot of respect for their peers. Right. And guys like around their age who they've been in battles with and in wars against. And the problem with the way they view their peers is the same as how they view themselves, is they're always the last to know. They're always the last to know when themselves or their peer that they respect just doesn't quite have it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think Tony Parker probably fits that. He's always been a ball dominant type of guy. Like, what's Tony Parker going to do? Spot up?
Yeah.
With LeBron and Paul George and the Laker kids and things like that. Lakers definitely need a backup point guard. I would prefer like a 3-and-D type of guy if at that spot, you know, if there is a guy like that to be had, or even with all of the ball handling that the Lakers have in the front court, if you can go big, go big. If you got a wing that can defend that position, stick him there and make them defend you on the other end.
Yep, I completely agree. Let's slide our attention over here to the bigs that the Lakers could maybe take a look at here. Both of the bigs on my list were Lakers last season, one being Brook Lopez, the other being Channing Frye. Brook Lopez said that he would take less to play for the Lakers if they are contending. If that's the case, and now you never know how much less, but if he is attainable, I think he fits perfectly with what the Lakers would be trying to do here.
Yeah, no, I mean, he'd be quite the bargain at that. To play devil's advocate a little bit, because mm-hmm. I do think ultimately he's probably the right guy to sign, is if you put this type of team together, who are you putting it together to beat? Mm. Golden State and Houston, right? Is there a third team? Maybe Boston? And even Boston fits this as well. Who does Brook Lopez defend on those teams? Horford can stretch the floor. Golden State and Houston, we know what they do. I remember watching the Western Conference Finals and to a lesser extent the Eastern Conference in Boston in particular, watching how does Brook Lopez fit into this? What can he do? And as good of a player, and you're probably not going to do better for the MLE, so even if he takes the Zaza role of playing 15, 20 minutes in some series and barely at all in others, that's still a great deal. I'm just not sure that he's on the court when it matters the most.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, like you said, if he plays the Zaza role, Julius Randle, you hope, develops into the type of player who plays those minutes anyway. But you don't want to sign somebody, or I guess you do if the value is right, but you don't want to sign somebody who you know going in is going to struggle in the series that you're building this team for.
Can we talk about Julius real quick? Just because,
yeah,
to me, he's the guy that has thrown in a good way a wrench in the plans. Like let's go under the pretense that this has been the plan. Like this has been agreed to for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if it has been, but let's just for argument's sake. Randall was not supposed to be a part of this. He was supposed to be a guy that was supposed to be gone after this season, whether or even before by trade or something like that. But he played his way into making the Lakers have a dilemma, right? All along, they could have gotten to this point and just stretched Luol Deng and gotten Paul George and gotten LeBron and be fine with it. To me, Julius is the biggest question mark in terms of – like he's the biggest uncertainty right now. I feel less certain about what's going to happen with Randall's future than I do about LeBron and Paul George.
That's really interesting. I haven't even thought about it that way, but I completely agree. And it's really too bad because I want Paul George and I want LeBron on the Lakers more than just about anything in the basketball sense. But look, I've been sitting on this as the thesis to a column for quite some time. But I think it's quite the accomplishment. Not just that that Randall has played himself into, as you put it, throwing a wrench into this entire situation, but the fact that he has gotten fans to alter their stance on him from this guy represents maybe one of the worst at the actual worst stretch. He's the last remaining piece of the worst stretch of Lakers basketball that was here for the entirety of that stretch. And yet still, despite that, even if he might represent that period of Lakers history, he's still somebody who Laker fans, the smart ones, are still saying, gosh, is there any way that we might be able to keep this guy? Is there any way that the Lakers can pull this off? I think that in and of its own is quite the accomplishment when you consider everything that the guy has been through.
Absolutely. And even taking that a step further, if he for some reason is a casualty of this summer, wherever he goes, I'm going to be cheering for him.
Absolutely.
At that stop.
100%. And I'll just quickly name a name here. Channing Frye was basically we could have the same exact conversation that we had about Brook Lopez, right? So we don't.
Yeah, and he's a great dude. Frye is a great dude. So if he's your 14th, 15th man type of guy, or just toward the end of the bench, that's exactly the type of guy you want.
Yep. We'll take a couple. We have about 5 minutes left here to talk about Mo Wagner. Who look, we it's hard to really. figure out or prognosticate on what rookies might look like, how they might handle a situation like they might be walking into, like they might be stepping into here, with having to go from not just being a rookie and having to figure that out on the fly, but be a rookie with the potential pressures that come with playing on a title contending LeBron-led team. You never know how they're going to respond to that, but you did take some time. You did break down some video with Wagner. And a question from iTunes is, this is from, I can't even pronounce the name here, but they're asking how he'll be able to set screens because he was very good in the pick and pop situation. So I'll just let you riff here for a bit. How does Wagner fit into everything? Does his presence on the roster make the need for a Brook Lopez or the need for a Channing Frye, if everything works out, just a little bit less?
I don't think so. I think that if your goal is to win a championship, then you need the grown-ups to be playing big roles. And anything that you get from the young guys, especially rookies, right? Mm-hmm. Anything that you get from rookies is gravy. So I don't think he diminishes that need. He's interesting in that he is a knockdown spot-up shooter. And in terms of how he cuts and just he's smart guy, he's a good passer. Him and LeBron would vibe so well off of each other. He is not a great off-ball screener, with the exception of he sets really good back screens, which is, you know, that lob play that they ran for Lonzo that they only converted like twice because nobody could throw a damn lob or they would just miss him totally. He will get Lonzo open on that. Like, there will be Lonzo dunks off of Wagner back picks if Wagner plays much at all last year, and LeBron's the one with the ball in his hands. I'm so looking forward to the LeBron to Lonzo. Like, I've got, I don't know if I can say this on the show, I've got blue balls on that lob play because there were so many damn times last year that they did not complete that. So, but with a guy like him, it's the defensive end, right? That's going to keep him off of the court. And he's just not in the type of shape that he needs to be in. We see all these pictures of Kuzma and Lonzo and all that, like, getting in better shape. He's going to need to be that dude within the year to have a, you know, much of an impact. So I don't expect much from him this year, with the exception of if you create an open shot for him, he's going to make it.
The big takeaway that I had from the Lakers draft was that they got guys who do things that you need in small doses, and you can expect them to do those things in those small doses, so long as you don't hope that they do anything beyond that. And if Wagner steps in and is just a knockdown spot-up shooter for maybe 5 to 7 minutes or 5 to 10 minutes a game, then I think it really works out there. But I completely agree with you that you need Brook Lopez or whichever player that they wind up signing for that role to be able to produce in a more predictable fashion. I'm really looking forward to all this, and the fact that it's, you know, it's probably not great that we have gone from LeBron, you know, maybe he comes to, okay, yes, he's definitely gonna come to the Lakers, and oh yeah, he's definitely coming with Paul George. How can we get rid of Luol Deng to be able to keep Julius Randle? And now we're on the fourth, I think, step of the hypothetical, where we're surrounding those hypothetical stars.
This is the height of Laker arrogance, right? Like, none of these guys are on the team. Like, all right, so we've got our core of LeBron James, Cleveland Cavalier, and Paul George, OKC Thunder. How do we build around them? Like, this is, I'm like leaning into it, man. I love this crap.
Me, and Rob Pelinka both, it turns out, is he. He thinks that the reason the Lakers haven't been able to make moves is because teams are jealous of their banners, which I do think is kind of a thing, but that's a separate point altogether.
Well, they aren't jealous of our script writers, I'll tell you that.
That's a great place to put a stopper on this one. This was a fun episode. Thank you again to those of you who are sending these questions. And if you guys have questions that are specifically for Pete, specifically for me, Pete, they asked about what kind of sandwich I like to put together. Do you have a favorite sandwich?
Boy, I like me a good roast beef sandwich.
Ooh. Like a French dip kind of thing, or?
Yeah, I like French dips, but I like heavy on the horseradish. Like,
yes.
I don't know, man. It's weird when you start getting older, you start eating crap that you never, like, when you were a kid, you were like, who eats this? And it turns out I eat this, so.
I'm right there. I just put as much meat on a sandwich as you possibly can and make it spicy, and you're generally good.
Slap 2 loaves of bread on each side of it, and you're good.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. All right. That'll do it, though, for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. You guys know where to find the show. You guys know where to find me and Pete, both on Twitter. Keep those questions coming, though, on iTunes. Thanks again for that. We have a couple fun guests lined up. I'm not going to get into them. I don't like to jinx the show in that fashion, but you guys will enjoy those conversations, and we'll talk to Pete again as we get ready for free agency on Friday. Pete and I will have a big, crazy prediction podcast. We've already given most of our predictions, but that'll be the next time you talk to Pete or hear from Pete. Until then, have a great rest of your day. Pete, thanks for hopping on.
Enjoy it as always.